This is Cross Hope, a daily word of hope and inspiration with Randy Snyder, Senior Minister of Crossview Christian Church. Now, with today's message from Cross Hope, here's Randy Snyder.
Have you ever had a moment in your life where you wished you could go back in time and relive a day, relive a week of your life? Sure, we all have. This week we talk about Psalm 130 in our series from the Penitential Psalms, where David discovers there is a land of beginning again with the Lord. It's called forgiveness. Louisa Fletcher Tarkington, a poet who wrote this poem called The Land of Beginning Again. Somebody is here right now who could say, man, I wish that poem were true. I wish there was some wonderful place called the Land of Beginning Again, where all our mistakes and all our heartaches and all our poor selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never put on again. Would you listen to that paragraph again? I wish there were some wonderful place called the Land of Beginning Again, where all our mistakes and all our heartaches and all our poor selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never put on again. As long as I live, I will remember a conversation I had probably 20, 22 years ago with a young man in his 20s in Columbus, Ohio. And he looked at me, and I didn't understand what he was talking about for a minute or two until he explained. He said, you know, Randy, I wish I could go back to my freshman year at the university. I wish I could go back to my freshman year. And I was naive, not following him at all. I said, well, why? What happened then? He said, that was the beginning of all the negative stuff in my life, my freshman year at the university. And I thought about that. Isn't that interesting? He wishes he could go back somehow magically to that point in time as a freshman in college to maybe not make some choices that he did make back then, the first year of school. And you know what? You can relate to that, and so can I. Everybody can. There are things in your life that you look back in retrospect with what you know now, and the age and the experience that you have now has impacted your thinking and your level of maturity in such a way that you say, I wish I could go back to a land of beginning again. Listen carefully to the most important thing I'm going to say today. There is a land of beginning again with the Lord. It's called forgiveness. You need to hear that today. There is a land of beginning again. It's called forgiveness. How do I know that? Because we're going to read the sixth of seven penitential psalms out of the book of Psalms, which some scholars believe were sequentially written. David was writing them out of his conviction, his guilt, his confession of the sin of adultery and murder, and we're in the sixth of seven psalms that are identified as penitential psalms. Next week we conclude with 143, but today we're in 130. I want you to find out how God is interested in the land of beginning again for you. First seven verses of Psalm 130, it says, out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, therefore you are feared. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I put my hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen waiting for the morning. More than watchmen wait for the morning, a repetition of the same phrase. We'll talk about that in a minute. O Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love. Underline that phrase, unfailing love. And with him is full redemption.
Well, this message is called The Land of Beginning Again, about God's forgiveness. It continues tomorrow on Cross Hope. Our web address, of course, is crosshope.org. That's one word, crosshope.org. God bless.
I'm going to begin with a situation that for some of you is hypothetical. This is as far away from your real life as could be. And thank God for some of you that that's the case. But there's going to be other people here today, men, women, young people, doesn't matter, where this is reality city for you. This is real life. The situation is that you hypothetically or in reality think about a person in your life, could be in your family, could be an extended family, could be where you work, it could be someone at school, it could be your circle of influence, where there's somebody in your world that has said to you in so many words, "I'll never forgive you as long as I live." They've made it plain to you, "I will never, ever forgive you for what you did 5 years ago, 10, 20, whatever the case may be, 50 years ago." And you know that in no uncertain terms, as dramatic as this sounds, it's real. They would die before they would forgive you. And I've heard people say that to my face, "I will die before I'll forgive him. I'll die before I forgive her." And you know what? They mean it. They really mean it. Now, here's my hypothetical question. If you have a person like that in your family or in your life, if hypothetically you did, would you want to hang out with them?
No.
You wouldn't want to have anything to do with him or her. Would you want to share Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner with them? No, you probably would be very uncomfortable. Why? Knowing that they have said in no uncertain terms, "I will never forgive you." And then the question comes, would you want to hang with a God who treated you like that?
No.
You wouldn't want to have anything to do with God if you knew God as someone who said, "I will never forgive you for what you've done." And by the way, if you're a person who has said, I referenced this in this series earlier, if you've said, "God could never forgive me for what I've done," this may shock you to hear this, but it's a form of pride. It's a form of arrogance to say that. God could forgive everybody else, but he couldn't forgive me. Whenever a man or woman has said that to me, you know what I say to them right to their face? Then what in the world was the cross for? What in the world was the cross for if there's a sin that you've committed that God says, "I can't forgive that"? Why did Jesus die on the cross? Why did he waste his time, his life, his life's blood, to die on the cross for my sins if there's a sin that's not covered by the blood? Let's do a little verse by verse. I want you to have a pen ready because I'm going to give you three statements about forgiveness that I want you to write down and take home. Write in your Bible. Write it on a check, the back of a check, but don't try to cash it. "Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy." The word "depths" is a nautical term. It has to do with the ocean. It has to do with water. Some of you still have memories from your childhood where you were in a motel pool and you were walking out and, you know, it got deeper and deeper and all of a sudden your feet dropped and you realized it's over my head. It can be very fearful for a child to go through that. Just totally encompassing fear when you realize I'm underwater. Maybe you've been in the ocean where there's been a drop-off. You've been in a lake where there's a drop-off. I can remember that in Lake Michigan, stepping off a drop-off and having that sensation, the water's over my head, growing up in the Chicago area. And you know what? People go through that every day emotionally and psychologically and spiritually. They're in the depths of depression. People are in the depths of grief. People can be in the depths of guilt. You can be in the depths of a lot of things. But here's what I want you to go home with. First of all, God hears you. Because David says, "Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy." And verse 3 said, "If you, O Lord, kept a record of sins, O Lord, who could stand?" Doesn't God know everything we've done? He sure does. He doesn't need a computer program. He doesn't need an app on his phone. He knows everything about you from beginning to end. And David says, "If you, O Lord, kept a record of my sins, O Lord, who could stand?" What does that mean? God chooses not to remember. That's what happens. It doesn't mean God is incapable of remembering. It doesn't mean he doesn't have the capacity or the wherewithal to do it. He just chooses, decides not to remember. How unlike you or me. A lot of us are scorekeepers. You may be married to a scorekeeper. You may have a child who's a scorekeeper. You may have a parent who's a scorekeeper. What do I mean by that? They can tell you everything you've done for the last 27 years and a half. And they've got it down. And some people are good at rehearsing other people's sins, but they have amnesia when it comes to remembering their sins. But they've got total recall of your sins. Total 100% recall, and David says, if you, Lord, kept a record, I couldn't even stand up. And verse 4 is a verse that somebody came to hear today, and I really mean that, not melodramatically, but truthfully. But with you there is forgiveness, therefore you are feared. Have you ever thought about a reason to fear the Lord is because he forgives you? I fear the Lord because he can forgive me. I want you to write down three things about sin and forgiveness from Stephen J. Cole, an author. He says, number one, we need to call sin, sin. We need to call sin, sin. We don't explain it away as a faulty coping technique due to a dysfunctional family background. You ever blamed stuff going on in your life because of a dysfunctional family background? I think everybody does. Everybody's dysfunctional. Every family's dysfunctional to a certain extent. And I really mean that. I don't mean that sarcastically. Every family is. Who is completely functional in life at all? We're human. We're frail. We have frailties as human beings. So we call sin, sin. We don't excuse it as a weakness or just my human nature. We say the most important words that a man or woman in this room could ever say, perhaps, Lord, I have sinned against you. Lord, I have sinned against you. The sooner we confess, the sooner we experience God's blessing. Number two, we see sin as serious. We not only call sin, sin, we see sin as serious. The closer you get to the Lord and thus see sin from his perspective, the more serious you will see it. Why is it serious? Because sin put Christ on the cross. That's why. I didn't say this in both services, but think about, not as a guilt trip, but think about what you've laughed at watching television the last month. You've laughed at stuff on television that wouldn't be funny if it was your husband. You've laughed at stuff on television that wouldn't be funny if it was your wife, if it was your son, your daughter, your father, your mother, your brother or sister, because as I often say, sin loses its sense of humor when it involves somebody you love. Sin loses its sense of humor when it involves someone you love. We need to see sin as serious. Sin always causes damage. Remember that. Sin always causes damage. Damage to the name of Christ. It causes damage to others in the family. And it causes damage to me. It erects a barrier between us and God and between us and our fellow human beings. We take sin seriously. Now, thirdly, this may surprise you. We need to take forgiveness seriously.
We'll continue tomorrow with this thought on CrossHope, crosshope.org.
Now, thirdly, this may surprise you. We need to take forgiveness seriously. We need to take forgiveness seriously to the point where David says, I fear God because he's the one who forgives. New motivation for fearing the Lord, not because he's just the creator, and not because he just put the planets in perfect gravitational orbit and he created this whole human body that's a miracle unto itself, and the miracle of birth and all the things that we can talk about that are miraculous in connection with the human body. We fear him because he forgives us, and he has forgiven me. We take forgiveness seriously, and that's a word for somebody today. In verse 6 says, my soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. When a watchman guarded a city from the wall of a city, you say he was looking for bad guys to show up. Yeah, he was. But you know what he was waiting on more than anything? The light. He was waiting for dawn. Talk to anybody who's worked security at a place and they work the night shift. They're waiting for the sun to come up. Talk to people who've been at a hospital all night with a loved one. What are they waiting for? There's a sense of hope that comes when the sun comes up. And so many people have said, well, if we can just make it till morning. There's nothing magical about the morning in terms of medical response or anything, but there's something psychological and spiritual about seeing the first light come through the window. And he said, I wait for the Lord like the watchman waits for the morning. Marianne Rogowski is from North Carolina. She's a sixth grade language arts teacher in elementary school or junior high, whatever that falls into, middle school. She's a parent now with two children, and I'm not going to even tell you her story. It wouldn't serve any purpose. She had some stuff happen in her past that she's not proud of. And she had a lot of grief because of things that happened in her past. But she said that her mother always did something that was visually and psychologically important. Her mother always left the front porch light on, always. And her mother even told her as a young person, I do that for a reason. I want you to know when that light's on, you're welcome to come home no matter what. The light being on in the porch for our home, this home, maybe not mean anybody else, but this home, it's a symbol of more than just leaving a security light on. It means you're free to come home. She never appreciated that until the time came in her life when that light meant something. And she had to pour out to her parents what had happened, and they wrapped their arms around her and said, we love you. We don't care what's happened. We love you. The light's on. You say, why are you telling that story? For this reason. This is a picture in Psalm 130, the light's on. With the Lord, there is forgiveness. And that's why he's to be feared. Let me quote Marianne Rogowski. She said, leaving the light on means the kind of love you have for your children because you are their last line of defense when life becomes too much to bear. My children, now 11 and 9, are quickly approaching the murky world of adolescence. And though I know it doesn't resonate with them yet, I have told them the story of the light on at the house. And while I too would like to believe that they will never need to come home with their heads held low, I assure them that home is a place where love is given no matter what. When the world seems darkest and they need it the most, they will understand why I leave the light on. The light is on in the kingdom of God. And it's in the verse that says, with the Lord there is forgiveness, and he is to be feared.
Well, we conclude this message tomorrow on Cross Hope. I hope you'll tune in to hear a powerful illustration as we wrap up. Our website is crosshope.org. That's crosshope.org.
Last year, I preached a series of, I think, 8 messages out of the book of Ecclesiastes. 12th chapter last year, talking about this verse, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. I can't tell you how many people, particularly older people, came out that Sunday and said, I wish I could go back and so I could remember my Creator in the days of my youth. Wish I could go back in time and do that. We all do. And what I shared with a few of them, I think surprised them. I said, you know what? Today is the youth of the rest of your life. You may only have 5 years left. You may only have 10, 20. Maybe you got 30, 40 years left. That's great. But today is the youth of the rest of your life. So to remember the Creator in the days of your youth takes on a new meaning for a 50-year-old, for the 60-year-old, the 70-year-old. Today is the first day, or is the youth of my life. I want to illustrate it by telling you a story of Zachary from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. He's just real blunt, says, I have hurt the people around me. The people who have loved me the most, I've hurt the most. Isn't that interesting? Anybody relate to that? The people who've loved me the most are the people I've hurt the most. Everything I did was a joke in my life. I hated the person I had become. Wow. I hated the person I had become. I couldn't stand the person that looked back at me in the mirror. But he realized he needed to make changes, and he started for the Lord working in his life. He made some changes in his life, and he says this, my life means something to me again, and those around me began to care about me in a new way, and I care for them. I believe that everyone makes mistakes in life, but it never is too late to change. Every person is capable of change. I went from one way of life to a completely different one and back. I learned a lot of things that most people will be fortunate enough to never have to know. I regret a lot. But instead of letting a bad situation consume me entirely, I've changed direction. Now I'm a better man, and I know that I never will be what I once was because of the Lord. I am now what I consider to be a better person and strive every day to better myself and make those around me proud. I'm not here to talk you into becoming a better man or a better woman. I'm here to tell you this, with the Lord there is forgiveness. That's the message. This is not a self-help message to make you a better man or easier to get along with and people will like you 10% more. It's about what needs to happen in your life and in my life, the forgiveness of the Christ in your life. Anything good in your marriage, connected to forgiveness. Anything good in your relationship with your children, connected to forgiveness. Anything at work that's positive, connected to forgiveness. Forgiveness is the element that most people need in their life more than anything, but you know what? They don't know it. You've got a brother or sister, perhaps, who doesn't know the thing they need in the life is not a promotion at work or another $50,000. They need forgiveness. You've got a son or daughter who needs to know it's not another degree, another house, another boat, another car. It's the forgiveness of Christ. It's the forgiveness of Christ. And today I want you to know that there is a land of beginning again. And it's tied up not with psychology or something emotional or something that will change your life superficially. It's connected to the forgiveness of Christ. With the Lord, there is forgiveness. Today, you're going to say, we're going to call sin, sin. Today, you're going to say, we take sin seriously and we take forgiveness seriously. We take sin seriously and we take forgiveness seriously. Why? Because it is. It's the most serious business in your life. Don't ever forget that.
You have been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information or to listen to or download a copy of today's message, go to crosshope.org. That web address again is www.crosshope.org. Be sure to tune in each weekday at this same time to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. This program has been a production of Cross Hope Ministries.